From WYPR, I'm Sheila Kast. We're on the record. As the Trump administration bears down on immigration enforcement, what's the recourse of immigrants without funds for a lawyer or even basic understanding of their rights? We hear from the Vera Institute of Justice and the Open Society Institute Baltimore about the Safe Cities Network, a nationwide initiative to bolster access to legal representation for immigrants facing deportation, and attorney Heather Benno of Catholic Charities Esperanza Center, who works directly with immigrants facing these issues, says this fund is needed more than ever.
Studies show that over 80% of everybody who's detained in immigration detention is actually fighting their case without a lawyer. And so this fund is meant to address that problem.
It's on the record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning. I'm Sheila Kast. We're On the Record. Since becoming president, Donald Trump has made immigration enforcement a priority. Back in September, he announced that DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, would end. DACA provides temporary protection status for people who entered the country illegally when they were minors. Later that month, the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, began a sweep of the country that resulted in the arrest of 500 people, including 28 in Maryland. ICE officials said they targeted people who violated U.S. immigration laws. What is the recourse of immigrants who are often without funds to enlist a lawyer's help or even the basic understanding of what that would mean? Later in the program, we'll talk with two lawyers who have direct experience assisting people who are wrestling with immigration issues. Joining us now is Annie Chen, Program Director at the Center on Immigration and Justice at the Vera Institute of Justice in New York City. The Vera Institute recently launched the Safety and Fairness for Everyone, or SAFE, Cities Network Initiative. It's a nationwide effort to bolster access to legal representation for immigrants facing deportation and also provide education regarding legal rights. Welcome to the show, Annie.
Hi.
Also with us is Tracy Brown, Deputy Director of Open Society Institute Baltimore, which has created its own effort called Safe City Baltimore. Its strategy dovetails with that of the Vera Institute. Welcome, Tracy.
Good morning, Sheila.
Annie, describe what the Safe Cities Network is.
The Safe Cities Network is a multi-jurisdiction network. It's dedicated to providing publicly funded representation for people who are facing deportation. And that's for people who are immigrants, who are going to immigration court, and who would otherwise not be able to afford their own attorney. The network has cities and counties, 11 of them from around the country. In Maryland, it includes Prince George's County and also the city of Baltimore, and that are all putting public dollars toward providing lawyers for immigrants.
And you mentioned the two jurisdictions in Maryland. What are some of the other cities across the country?
Some of the other cities are in California. There are also cities in the Midwest and two cities in Texas, and we also have Atlanta, Georgia.
So was the idea of the Safe Cities Network based on another existing program?
Yeah. There's something called the New York Immigrant Family Unity Project, which has been in New York since 2013, and that's something that the Vera Institute of Justice has been involved in since the beginning. It is basically the first program in the country of its kind that sets up a public defender system for detained immigrants who are going to immigration court and who would not otherwise be able to afford an attorney.
I want to pick up on a phrase that you used that might have sort of flown by quickly. You said essentially that the New York Project set up a public defender system. Mm-hmm. That, of course, is a phrase we hear in the criminal justice system. Immigration violations do not tend to be criminal violations. They tend to be civil matters.
Yeah, that's right. And for that reason, because immigration violations are civil matters that people don't get a government-funded attorney like they would in criminal court. But the thing is, when immigrants are facing deportation, they still have to go to court. They're often in detention. You know, they're wearing jumpsuits. It's just like they're in jail, just like in the criminal justice system. They're having to go to court without an attorney if they can't afford their own attorney. They're facing a government-trained attorney who, just like a prosecutor, who's trying to deport them, making legal arguments, and they have to go to court by themselves if they can't afford their own attorney and, you know, somehow understand the legal arguments and be able to make their arguments to the judge. So basically, it's very difficult for immigrants to be able to make their arguments and access the legal rights that they actually are entitled to under U.S. law without having an attorney to assist them. And so that's really the goal of the Safe Cities Project and of the New York Project that I mentioned earlier, is to give people a chance to make the immigration court process fairer. It's not really about, you know, we don't decide if the immigrant deserves to stay or deserves to go. That's something that's decided by the immigration judge under immigration laws. What we're doing is trying to make the whole system fairer by giving people an attorney so they actually understand what their rights are and are able to articulate some of the things that they're actually entitled to under our laws.
Tracy, tell me what the Open Society Institute is doing that connects with this or is different.
So we are very pleased to be a part of the VERA network. That part of our strategy focuses on the representation for people who are in deportation hearings. The Safe City Baltimore effort is broader than that, addressing the legal needs of immigrants across the spectrum of the issues that they're facing in the immigration proceedings. And as Annie said, it's really about basic due process and fairness. Some immigrants have a right to stay in the United States. So this is not an effort to create new remedies or to circumvent the law, but really to give the immigrants access to attorneys who can help them make both the legal and the factual arguments to the judge that might give them a right to stay in the country. So that's the deportation defense part of it. In addition, there are immigrants who have affirmative rights. They may have some argument for asylum or some other reason that might justify them being in the United States. But again, without access to an attorney, they can't argue those rights. And so some of the other grantees that are part of the Safe City Baltimore strategy will help the immigrants assert those rights as well. And then the other piece of it is what we're calling family safety planning, and that is families who are facing the possibility of deportation, there are things that their families can do to prepare for that deportation because it has such a huge impact on the family, and it can help preserve family unity if they have access to the legal advice and steps that they can take, things like getting a power of attorney for their child so that if they are deported, that child has some place to go. If the child is a U.S. citizen.
Let me interrupt on that. How does getting the power of attorney for a child give the child a place to go?
Remaining in the United States. So if there's the possibility that the adult, the parent, is going to be deported, and the child perhaps is going to remain behind in the United States, it's power of attorney to the aunt or some other family member so that there is a protection for that child and some continuity for that child. So one of the grantees is Esperanza Center. Their primary function in the strategy is to work with individuals and families to do that family safety planning.
And we're going to be talking more to Esperanza Center later in the show. This is On the Record on WIP. I'm Sheila Cast, speaking with Tracy Brown, Deputy Director of Open Society Institute Baltimore, and with Annie Chen, Program Director from the VERA Institute of Justice. We're talking about the Safe Cities Network, an initiative to provide legal education and representation to immigrants facing deportation. Annie, the New York Immigration Family Unity Project you mentioned, what has been its impact on the success of people who are challenging deportation?
Yeah, I mean, as I mentioned, VERA just released a study, an evaluation of that project over 3 years in November of 2017. And what we found is that the success rate of people who are represented by the program went from 4% to a predicted success rate of 48% after they got an attorney through this project. And so that's over a 10 times increase in success rate. And so really it just shows that representation matters and this model is effective.
What were the criteria for deciding which cities would receive funds and become part of the Safe Cities Network?
You know, I mentioned some of the different cities before, and you'll notice that they're spread all around the country. That was definitely one of the goals, was to put together a really diverse network to show that, you know, it can be big cities, it can be small cities. And so that sort of geographic diversity was important, same as, you know, political diversity. It's a range of both red states and also blue states, purple states that are coming together and standing up to protect their immigrant communities. The other part of it was really need and the commitment and the strength of the partnership. And that's something that we really saw in both Prince George's County and also Baltimore. The state of Maryland actually has the seventh largest docket in terms of the number of pending cases in immigration court around the country. As of May of 2017, there were about 23,000 people from the state of Maryland in immigration court, and 40% of those do not have attorneys representing them.
Tracy, the groups that OSI's project will work with, how were they chosen?
Our main goal was to get resources into the community as quickly as possible. So the first thing we had to do, though, was raise the funds to have the resources available. And so this is really a comprehensive strategy supported by the philanthropic community, by government, and by individuals. One of the things that we were really gratified by is that we had contributions from over 60 individual people, regular old people, some who were making major contributions, some who were making $25 contributions. And one of the reasons why we launched the fund was because, in response to the stepped up immigration policies and enforcement policies, we felt like the community wanted to do something. And one way that non-lawyers can do something is to contribute money to lawyers to get those resources to immigrants in the community. And then we wanted to be able to get those resources into the community as quickly as possible. So we identified grantees, nonprofit organizations that employed attorneys in the community that we already knew had a proven track record of providing these services. So they were organizations that were already known to the community, so they didn't have to do a lot of initial outreach, who already had relationships with the immigration court, with the detention centers, so that we knew they could get up and running very quickly.
And is the Mayor's Office of Immigrant and Multicultural Affairs involved in this initiative?
Yes, they were our governmental partner, and they actually initially came to Open Society Institute Baltimore to ask us to house this fund. After doing an assessment of the community needs, they identified the need for legal services.
Annie, what will you look at to measure the success of the Safe Cities Network?
Another part of what VIRA is doing in this network and what's really baked in is a data collection and research effort. And I mentioned the New York program and what we were able to show in terms of the success rate increasing by 1,000%. That's something that we're able to do because we collected case-level data and over a period of 3 years. We're planning to do the same thing in safe cities across the the 11 jurisdictions. So we'll be collecting information that really gives you a portrait of the people who are in the program so that we can see, you know, the family ties that they have and the community ties that they really have. What we know is that a lot of the immigrants facing removal really have lived here for a really long time. Like in the New York program, they were here for an average of 16 years in the U.S. and facing deportation. And so we want to show that kind of information. We want to show what are the family ties they have, like how many kids they have, how many of them are U.S. citizens or green card holders, to show, you know, the households that they're supporting in the U.S. So the family unity sort of part is an important part of the study. And the other part of the study will just be the effectiveness of the representation, as well as the impact, the economic impact that immigrants make on the local economy.
Thank you both for telling us about it. Thanks.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Annie Chen is a program director at the Center on Immigration and Justice at the VIRA Institute of Justice. Tracy Brown is deputy director at Open Society Institute Baltimore. We've been talking about the Safe Cities Network and Safe City Baltimore to improve immigrants' access to legal education and representation. After the break, we'll talk with two lawyers from Catholic Charities Esperanza Center to hear how they'll be putting Safe Cities Network funding to use. This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about the Safe Cities Network, a coordinated nationwide effort to increase access to legal representation for immigrants facing deportation and also to educate them about their legal rights. Just 11 localities across the country received matching funding from the Vera Institute of Justice. Baltimore is one, so is Prince George's County. We spoke with the Vera Institute Director Annie Chen and also with Tracy Brown, Deputy Director at Open Society Institute Baltimore. Joining us now is Val Tuanmo, Director of Catholic Charities Esperanza Center, which will receive some of the funding. Welcome, Val.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
And also with us is Heather Benno, Managing Attorney of Immigration Legal Services at the Esperanza Center. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Val, what services will Esperanza Center be providing as part of the Safe Cities Network initiative?
So primarily two different types of services. One will be immigration legal services, which will expand our current capacity to provide legal representation to immigrants facing deportation and other folks who are potentially eligible for other immigration relief, as well as what we call sort of safety planning, which is services to help people plan in the event that a family member should suddenly be detained and or deported. They need to make arrangements for who will handle responsibility for children they leave behind, for financial affairs, that sort of thing. So those will be services that we offer as well.
Tell me more about that family plan. I mean, most of us can't imagine how one plans for what seems like complete upheaval of your life. How do you do that in advance? What kinds of questions do you ask?
I agree, Sheila. Nobody can fully plan for an eventuality like that. But what we do offer is we offer information, guidance, and then documents for people that they can use to designate a person who will be responsible for child care. So, for example, the schools would need written authorization for someone who's able to pick up a child from school or give a child other types of permissions that they might need in school. They'll need something that they can leave a person designated who could perhaps obtain benefits for a child who is left behind if a parent is deported. In addition, there are powers of attorney forms that we can assist people with so that they can designate someone who can handle their financial affairs should they suddenly leave. So basically, it's trying to alert families to, you know, if you were suddenly not around, what kinds of paperwork would you need in order to make somebody responsible, and what other kinds of things can you do in your home to try to make sure that those who are left behind are taken care of?
Heather, you're dealing directly with immigrants needing such services. Paint a picture for us of why there's an increased need for services.
People are really living in fear, and not only in Baltimore, around the state and around the country now, of immigration enforcement. And this has been very unfortunate, and it's affected our community, especially here in Baltimore, where we have a fairly sizable community of longtime immigrants, people who have lived in this area for decades, folks who have maybe lesser status or protection, something like DACA or temporary protected status that this administration is threatening to revoke or terminate right now. These are all people who have contributed to our local economies, who are teachers, who have kids in our schools, and they are scared to leave their homes, to go out into the community, to bring undocumented relatives or kids to school, because they're scared that immigration is going to pick them up on the street or pick them up at some other public accommodation like a courthouse. So we at ILS are trying to figure out with our clients how to best protect them and how to sometimes unravel a very complicated immigration history.
ILS, Immigration Legal Services. So how can you address that? I can understand the concept of representing someone in court, but you're talking about situations that are not necessarily in a courtroom?
They are not in a courtroom necessarily now. And the way that this happens is that somebody, when they're coming to the United States, let's say they're fleeing war, violence in their home country, an abuser of some sort, comes to the United States and is apprehended by immigration, either at the point of entry at an airport or at the border. They're given instructions frequently in a language that they don't understand without any translation. The immigrant themselves may or may not be a minor, so under 18, and frequently just don't understand what is expected of them to continue to pursue lawful immigration status in this country. So many people, even decades ago, may have, through some administrative error or just by not understanding the process, may have not shown up on a court date accidentally, or may have gone to the wrong immigration court and actually have orders of deportation on their record that have been on their record for many years. And now immigration is telling these folks, we're looking for you. And so at Catholic Charities, what we try to tell people are you should go speak to an attorney, because there are things that you can do to try to correct these problems and proactively try to protect yourself before you're arrested, before you go to an immigration detention center.
That's Heather Benno, attorney at the Esperanza Center, here on The Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. Also with us is Val Twanmo, director of the Esperanza Center. We're talking about legal assistance they provide immigrants facing deportation. Heather, is there a particular family story that stays with you?
Yes. In particular, I consulted a woman not too long ago who entered the country with her two young children. And she was fleeing, actually, a crime that she had suffered in her home country of El Salvador. She was held up by members of the MS-13, it's an international gang, in a public market, had a gun placed to her head, and was basically robbed. She filed a police report as a consequence, described the person who did it, and sought to avail herself of the protections of her home country. And as a consequence, when the person who robbed her, when the gang found out that she had filed a police report, they sent two people who, within a week, raped her simply for having reported the crime. And after experiencing this, she felt that there was no protection available to her in her home country, and she had to flee to the United States. She was apprehended by immigration when she tried to enter, and she's now seeking asylum and protection in deportation proceedings. And she would be one of the thousands of people that normally would go without counsel unless we were able to provide legal representation or some of our other legal services partners.
If she's apprehended as soon as she gets in the country, does she immediately say asylum?
Yeah. She should. Yeah. And the problem is with her, it actually took her 3 years to actually get an asylum interview. She tried to say, I want an asylum interview, but the Border Patrol officers don't necessarily speak Spanish. They don't take the time to find somebody to speak Spanish to her. And they just basically ordered her deported without considering why she was there at all, and actually without even giving her the opportunity to have an interview with an asylum officer. It was only actually after the fact that she contacted through lawyers, tried to reopen her case so that she could actually get this asylum interview. But you would think that would be the first thing that would happen. But instead, people are put in immigration detention.
Mm-hmm. And we understand that her story is not unique. It's not unusual for people, even if they cross the border and say, you know, if they know enough to say, I'm seeking asylum, which obviously a lot of people don't. But even if they do, we understand it is not unusual for that to just sort of be ignored, especially in these times where we have such increased enforcement against basically anybody who is here without already having achieved some kind of status.
Heather, from what you know of the funding for the Safe Cities Network and for Safe City Baltimore, how much of an impact do you think it will have on the community's need?
I think that this fund will have a very vast impact on the community and also on the way that we provide legal services out of the Baltimore Immigration Court. Currently, studies show that over 80% of everybody who's detained in immigration detention is actually fighting their case without a lawyer. And so this fund is meant to address that problem, that people in removal proceedings or deportation proceedings aren't guaranteed a free public defender like they are in the criminal process. So we believe that this fund is a really important step toward moving in a direction that allows immigrants to present their best cases and to really get the protections that they're eligible for when they seek them in deportation proceedings.
Thank you both for telling us about it. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Heather Benno is an attorney at the Catholic Charities Esperanza Center, and Val Tuonmo is director of the Esperanza Center. We've been discussing the increased legal assistance they'll provide immigrants facing deportation as part of the Safe Cities Network initiative. Earlier, we spoke with Annie Chen from the Vera Institute of Justice and Tracy Brown from Open Society Institute Baltimore. We have links to information about the Safe Cities Network at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Thanks for listening. Be with us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.